So you have to pay attention very carefully when Paul was talking about truth and advertising and biblical trees. The reason was that our ads on KMUW have said that the sermon series I'm starting today is on biblical trees and the stories behind them and how those stories apply to our lives, and I'm not. So he had to do something about trees so that we had accurate advertisement. Actually, we may do that sermon series later on this spring, but I wanted to take time in this time of Eastertide when we're all empowered because we are part of the resurrection and we are resurrected people. I can see you all smiling, nodding, and saying, I'm ready, I'm excited, I'm invigorated, Easter has come, I have a new life. So I wanted to talk about leadership. Okay, so much for that. I'm going to go back to biblical trees. So Ralph Smith, who used to be the regional minister of the Christian Church in Kansas, was a very tall, handsome man. He was intelligent and also witty, but he had a commanding presence. After all, he was the head of more than 100 churches in Kansas. And one day, when visiting his office many years ago, I noticed hanging above his bookshelves was a strange hat. It was a baseball hat, but it had two different bills, one on the front, one on the back. And on one side were printed the words, "Where did they go?" On the other side, when you turned it around, it said, "I must follow them, for I am their leader." I thought it was hilarious. Well, Time magazine asked the question, "Who's in charge?" And they answered their own question with these discouraging words, "The nation calls for leadership, and there's no one home." Historian James McGregor Burns, in his pivotal book, Leadership, says, one of the most universal cravings of our time is a hunger for compelling and creative leadership. Another expert says, the leadership of our time is a crisis without precedent. So these next 2 weeks, I want to talk about leadership, especially from a Christian perspective. And today I have, in a typical seminary-taught format, 3 points and 10 characteristics, a poem and a story. No. I just have the 3 points and the 10 characteristics. Okay, the first point is leadership is a spiritual activity. Stephen Covey, who you know is the author of the 7 Effective Habits, and then he made money on that first book, so there was a second and a third and a fourth. He really was a good leader in that regard. But he wrote about leadership in this way. He said, those striving to be good leaders see life as a mission, not as a career. Their nurturing sources have armed and prepared them for service. In effect, every morning they yoke up and put on the harness of service, thinking of others. See yourself every morning yoking up, putting on the harness of your service in your various stewardships. See yourself taking the straps and connecting them around your shoulders as you prepare to do the work that assigned to you that day. See yourself allowing someone else to adjust the yoke or the harness, and see yourself yoked to that other person at your side, a coworker, a spouse, a partner, and learning to pull together with that person. And then he goes on to say, I emphasize this principle of service or yoking up because I have come to believe that effort to become a good leader without a load to carry simply will not succeed. You never knew to give thanks for that harness and yoke and the load you're carrying, right? But those are the signs of a good leader, according to Covey. He goes on, "We may attempt to do it as a kind of intellectual or moral exercise, but if we don't have a sense of responsibility, of service, or of contribution, something that we need to pull or to push, it becomes a futile endeavor." So I want to focus specifically on a kind of leadership that is called servant or service leadership. It actually comes from an ancient philosophy and in the last 20 years has been resurrected. A good post-Easter resurrection, you know, you might say. So this kind of leadership can be found in all different sorts of religious texts through philosophy, and the idea of service leadership really transcends religion. In the 4th century BCE, the book Arthashastra, try saying that 10 times, it says, "The leader shall consider as good not what pleases him, but what pleases his followers. The leader is a paid servant and enjoys the resources of the state together with the people." 4th century writing. And then from Islam, "The leader of the people is its servant." And from Jesus, "You know that those who are regarded as leaders of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them, but not so with you. Instead," he said to his disciples, "whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to come first must be servant of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." So these and many other religious traditions confirm that service leadership is a deeply spiritual experience. Now, leadership, second point, is a selfless action. One of the key marks of a good leader is that they seek to serve others over their own self-interests. And that's why, quote, "we gladly look to them for direction and guidance in times of indecision, turmoil, and trouble," according to a Leadership Now article. So in the 5th century BCE, the Roman army, imagine them in all their power, they were surrounded. The country was in need of a leader who would seize the moment and turn the situation of defeat into victory. And they called to a man who was out plowing his field, not the kind of person you would think would lead the Roman government. He was a farmer. He came, he saw, and he conquered. And then what did he do? He went home. He went home. Cincinnatus gained fame for his selfless devotion to his country. And half his legendary, this legendary hero of Roman Republic gave his all in a time of crisis, and then gave up the reins of power when the task was done, and he went home to plow. Interesting way to do leadership, don't you think? And in more modern American times, our first president, of course, notoriously George Washington, considered the father of our country, provided a paramount example of this same sort of custodial leadership. You know, he was an aristocratic gentleman farmer. He had a distinctive character, and when called upon to defend the interests of our fledgling nation as commander-in-chief of the Revolutionary Army during the American War for Independence, he rose up to the challenge, and he persevered against all the odds against him. And then, after 8.5 years in being the most powerful man in America, he resigned his commission and returned to his agricultural pursuits. Not surprisingly then, he became a reluctant and yet automatic and unanimous choice for the first president of the United States, and he served 2 terms. And his final, and and some would say his most sacred act of service to his country was that, like Cincinnatus in Rome, in whom he was often compared to his contemporaries, Washington stopped serving and went back to Mount Vernon in Virginia to farm. Washington is remembered for his strength of character and his discipline, his loyal patriotism, his principled leadership, his selfless devotion to public duty. He held in trust for the American people the very values and beliefs that made our nation possible, but he did so without regard for his own personal gain. So in true reality, leadership is and always has been a selfless pursuit. But it's more than that, and that brings us to point number three. Leadership is a matter of stewardship, of spiritual stewardship. Machiavelli, the Renaissance writer, was thought to be incredibly cynical, and yet he was an observant political thinker. And he insisted that leadership was virtuous only if the good of the community was sought out and achieved above everything else. So a good leader is a steward of the community. Think about that in terms of your family, of being a good steward for your family. Think about that in terms of organizations you belong to, or clubs or service groups, of being a steward for others. Think about that in the church, in our Wichita community, where we have people who have risen up and taken on the yoke of service leadership and give to the community for the benefit of all. A good leader offers a service that's really not about ownership or control. These are very important things. A spiritually attuned leader watches over what has been placed in our trust by those who own it, and we do it for the benefit of those who benefit from it. Leaders are spiritual servants who are entrusted with resources that are not our own, but are in our care. So the 10 characteristics of service leaders are found in your bulletin. I can see you're waiting with bated breath. What are these characteristics? Well, I think it's interesting that the first one listed is listening, and the second one, empathy. And then a leader brings about healing. Now, this could be financial healing. It could be healing emotionally, all different sorts of healing. But to do that, you have to be aware. So that's the next quality. And then persuasion. Of course, we love leaders who can persuade us and move us. And they also need to be conceptual and have foresight. And then, as I've talked about, stewardship. They have to have a commitment to others' growth and a commitment to building community. Other leadership experts list these same characteristics for effective leaders. This list came from Larry Spears, but it's quoted over and over by other leadership experts. So the Center for Spiritual Leadership at the Pastoral Institute in Georgia says it best, I think. They said, servant leadership is a lifelong journey that includes the discovery of oneself, a desire to serve others, and a commitment to lead. Now, unlike leadership that approaches in a top-down hierarchical style, service leadership is very different because it emphasizes collaboration and truth and empathy and the ethical use of power. So at heart, the individual is a servant first and makes a conscious decision to lead in order to better serve other people, not to increase their own power. So this very week, I think we have a great example. One CEO, Dan Price, took a 90% pay cut and slashed his company's profit just so he could give his employees a raise. Price, who heads up the Seattle payment processing firm Gravity Payments, he founded that organization, he has pledged to make sure that all of his staffers make at least $70,000 annually for the next 3 years. And to do that, he's cutting his own $1 million salary, a surprise to his wife, by the way, and he's cutting it to the $70,000 himself, and he's dipping into the firm's almost $2 million profit to do this. This will double the pay of many of his 30 employees, and it will mean significant raises for an additional 40 people. And when asked how he settled on $70,000 per employee, he said this. He said he learned that this was the income in today's world that is needed to meet the basic needs of a family. And he said he didn't want his employees to be distracted from their work because they were trying to meet the needs of their families. So he decided to pay them enough that they wouldn't have to worry, and then they would show their commitment to the firm. And he's willing to put his own salary at that level to find out for himself if it's a livable wage. I thought this was an incredible news story and a perfect example of what stewardship and spiritual leadership is about. So no matter your age or your employment status, this is your assignment this week. I would encourage you to think about how much you want to be a real servant leadership leader in your home, in your volunteer work, in our church, in our community, in your jobs. All of these put together, what can you do to make your actions, number one, deeply spiritual, number two, a service to others and selfless, and number three, concerned with stewardship, and finally, based on the service leadership traits that are in your bulletin. It's no mistake that the boards of our church meet today. So I encourage you all to take your leadership lists and to think about what it means to be a service leader in our church and to put on that yoke and then to help someone else tie up the straps of their yoke and then to connect yourselves so that you are working in partnership to bring about the best you can in service to others. Not only the leaders of this church, but in your professions and your personal lives, with your family members, I encourage you to think about leading in service to others. Amen. As we come to our end of our service today, I invite you to stand as you're able and sing our choral benediction.